Hey everyone, just a reminder that we are recording remotely while we're quarantined, so the sound might be slightly compromised, but hopefully not too bad. Enjoy!
Welcome to Feminists Without Mystique. Normally we have multiple sections in our episodes, including calling out terrible things happening below the top headlines in a segment called We See You and ending with a good thing. But tonight we are continuing our two-part episode on police brutality, this time focusing on some of the things that white people aren't quite understanding. So, and yeah. I guess if you like us, follow us, whatever, but we're less interested in that right now.
Yeah.
Trying to have some good convos. We're just going to try to speak to, we had a couple of calls come in with some questions about what's going on. And then, you know, I've seen things on my Facebook feed from relatives. And they're just some sort of common retorts to Black Lives Matter movement that we're going to address. So that's what we're going to spend tonight on.
Yeah. Well, and like a lot of the little bits and pieces of people's questions, people who called in or reached out to us are addressed kind of throughout this episode. Cause it's a spoiler alert. We feel it's all connected. But then at the end we will kind of directly answer like the kind of specific queries for people. Before we get into it, I did just want to bring up the travesty of voting access and inequality happening in Georgia today, because they had their primary. And most people will remember that Georgia had a really embarrassing 2018 with Brian Kemp, who's the now governor, when he was facing Stacey Abrams. And Brian Kemp was at the time the Secretary of State, and he was in charge of the Secretary of State is in charge of kind of managing voting throughout the state. And that seems sort of fucked up if you're running to be managing. And he had purged hundreds of thousands of people off the rolls in the lead up to the election. And there was widespread accounts that that people didn't receive their mail-in ballot, or they couldn't have access, or they were confused. So lots of fuckery there. And today there's been widespread reports that people had to wait in line for hours and hours because the new voting machines didn't work. Lots of people reported that they didn't get their mail-in ballots. And it was such a disaster that Georgia had to extend the timeline for like another couple of hours. So I think Georgia, like statewide, have had to keep their the polls open until 9 p.m. Eastern, just because people had serious issues getting to the polls. Just a reminder that this kind of bullshit became legal in 2013 when the Roberts Court, in a 5-4 decision, gutted the Voting Rights Act. The 1964 Voting Rights Act, which had to keep getting renewed, and it was always renewed. And then in 2013, Roberts was like, quote, he said, quote, things have changed dramatically, like speaking about the South. As soon as these Voting Rights or the Voting Rights Act was gutted, there were trigger laws like ready to be passed in different places, including Georgia and Texas. Georgia closed 214 polling places after the Voting Rights Act was gutted. And today in June, there were fewer than 80 polling places in Metro Atlanta. Mitch McConnell is currently blocking legislation passed by House Democrats to restore the Voting Rights Act, because of course he is. It's like barely even worth mentioning, because like, of course he is.
He can't help himself.
So I just want to kind of remind people that Stacey Abrams, who has had her eye on the ball in terms of voting rights since Brian Kemp like sort of un he beat her by cheating. She wrote an opinion piece in the New York Times called "I Know Voting Feels Inadequate Right Now." And basically it's a really powerful piece about the importance of voting. And she says, quote, "Voting will not save us from harm, but silence will surely damn us all." And to that end, I just wanted to plug Vote Save America. They have a program called Adopt a State. And if you're unfamiliar, there are 6 states where Trump won in 2016 that we need to win. We need to win them. And they're very flippable. They've gone blue before. So there's 6 states. You can look them up and just adopt a state. You pick a state and then you get a lot of digital resources and there's a whole team and community that will help you. And then it's all work that you can do remotely from home, different like texting and getting out the vote and just all sorts of, it's a whole thing where all you have to do, and because I know that this stuff can get so overwhelming, is you just pick one state, you adopt that state, you will be doing amazingly important work towards getting Trump out of office, which is the most important thing this year. I mean, there are lots of important priorities, but like pick a state, focus on it, and get out the vote.
Yes, we love that. All right, now I guess to dive in, I think we're going to start with the what's wrong with the All Lives Matter. It's not even a movement. It's just sort of a retort. And I feel like these people tend to overlap with the Happy Holidays people who say that like we're erasing Christmas, which is not an equivalency because Christmas is not actually discriminated against and Black people are, but I digress.
Yeah.
And so there are, I think part of it comes with the fact that white people aren't used to things not being about them. Mm-hmm. Or to them not being the heroes or to them not being this or that. Or people kind of think there's, when people say Black Lives Matter, they mean only Black Lives Matter, which is not what anyone is saying. But it's there was this great, this law professor did this great thing responding to a student who had a problem with the Black Lives Matter movement, where he spoke to the difference between focus and exclusion, which I think is an important point to make. Black Lives Matter does not exclude mm-hmm. other people. It focuses on people. And because as we mentioned last night, you have, police brutality happening, Black people being murdered at rates much higher than their white counterparts, despite them being less of the population. The facts, the data, it's all there. We've already spoken to it. We'll continue to provide resources for people. But the reason that Black Lives Matter needs to be a movement is because our society has not shown that Black Lives Matter. We have shown that white lives matter. Mm-hmm. But we have not been treating Black people fairly or equally in any way in the society. So the reason that Black Lives Matter needs to exist is because we need to show that Black Lives Matter. We need to give value to the show Black people that they have the value that they do have. We don't need to do that for white people because white people are not targeted. Mm-hmm. And then there are a lot of sort of memes that go around that try to explain it, where, there's one where there's one house on fire and one house that's not on fire. And they're spraying the hose on the house that's not on fire, saying all houses matter, which is a little reductive, but it gets the point across, which is one house is on fire. We need to focus our energy on that house. Mm-hmm. It does not help to say all houses matter because not all houses are on fire. And there's sort of a similar meme that goes around, like, do you crash strangers' funerals shouting, I too have felt loss? Like, that's a meme that gets shared a lot. And there are also other ones with diseases, like, oh, someone dies of cancer, do you show up to their funeral saying, other diseases matter? Which, again, is not a fully, it's not a full equivalency, but I think it helps people understand the point that we are not saying other lives don't matter. We are focusing our attention on a group of people who have been marginalized, discriminated against, and murdered by people who are supposed to be upholding the law. So again, yeah.
Oh, sorry. No, continue.
No, just to say, like, we're saying Black Lives Matter because Black lives have not been shown to matter. because we need to focus on Black lives, because systemically we have been murdering Black people. So, yeah, there's no need to say all lives matter. No one's saying only Black people matter. And the structure in our country does not say only Black people matter. Like, just think about it. There's the thing that I've been sharing with relatives, one article that I feel like kind of shows a lot of different examples is on Vox, and you can just Google Vox, 9 reasons why not to say all lives matter. And they also have some people of color, like some actual Black people speaking to this, and they have other examples and other kind of ways to get people to understand this. So, and as with all things, if you're not understanding it, Google it.
Yeah. There are explainer courses.
Yeah.
And I think that a lot of the reductive memes, which I find them still, I found them helpful in 2014 or whenever the sort of this like started, there was the rebuttal to Black Lives Matter. But like, the part of the reason I think why they're helpful, and there's why that funeral one and the house one, it's like, it's helpful to understand too, that not only is All Lives Matter to really get the point across that it's actually really inappropriate and destructive. So it's you're right. Actively doing harm by saying all lives matter. I think it's like, it's also, it is not the equivalent of like stepping back out of an argument and being like, well, there's, you know, I think I can see both sides, you know, or something. It's like, this is not like creating some sort of calming effect where you have just decided that you're above it all. And like, well, all lives matter. It's incredible. You are actively doing harm. And I saw somewhere someone, an article said, there's a difference between something being true and something being relevant. So like, of course it's true that all lives matter. Like that's a true thing, but it's not relevant in this conversation where we're trying to shine a light on systemic racism and an injustice that's happened throughout the course of centuries that has led to devaluing Black lives, like and how that has been an insidious thread in almost every aspect of both Black and white lives. Like all everyone's lives are touched by the structure of devaluing Black life. So while yes, it's true that all lives matter, that's actually just not that's not relevant to this conversation. And in fact, it's actively hurtful.
Exactly. There's a cruelty to it. You know, it's unnecessary. It takes away from the conversation. You know, grow up, you know?
And also, we've made this point before, I'm sure. And it's been made 1,000 times on Twitter, but if you're an All Lives Matter person, take a step back and just wonder, like, think about when you chime in about when all lives matter. Like, is it when kids are, you know, in cages at the border? What about Syrian refugees? What about there are many instances in which when we think about how we should value all lives and come to issues with humanity, I feel like the same people, like there's a similar group of people who are ignoring those lives.
It's bonkers. And there was a friend of mine, I pointed out on the social meds, you know, there are all those white Christians going to Africa and posting pictures with, you know, with Black children and acting as if they are saving them. And those are the same people saying all lives matter. And so they made the point, like, it seems your silence now makes it seem like it was a lot more about the vacation for you.
Yeah.
Actually what you're doing, you know, it's, you want to post this pretty picture of you quote unquote saving people who they don't need to be saved by you.
Yeah.
But then when you look at Black people in the country that you live, where you want to wear your flag, and somehow that's not a problem. A little hypocritical. Not very Christian.
No.
Is there anything else you want to speak to on All Lives Matter before we barrel roll into white privilege.
No, let's get right into it.
So we do have an episode, White Privilege 101, that you can go back and listen to that touches on white privilege and whatnot. But I think we've both seen kind of this resurgence of white people feeling like they're victims, like they're being attacked in all of this. A family member of mine, extended family member, made a post, and I did respond to it, and I did make my points. Don't worry. But they posted this meme that said, "When I was born, they must have ran out of white privilege because I had to work my ass off to get where I am." Mm-hmm. Okay, missing the point. The existence of white privilege does not mean that no white people in the history of time have ever had any sort of struggle or any sort of adversity to overcome. That obviously is not true. There's economic privilege. There's all kinds of privilege. There's male privilege. But what this is saying is that with all other things being equal, if you and a black person as a white person, you have privilege over them. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can look at the fact that black men in the U.S. serve longer prison sentences than white men when they're found guilty of the same crime, even when you account for criminal history and other factors. I think this has been shared a lot, but maybe not enough, that if you have a white-sounding name, you get twice as many job interviews as a candidate with a non-white-sounding name, even if you have the exact same resume. And they figured this out through studies where they sent these resumes out.
Same thing with Airbnb rentals. If you have a black-sounding name, you get, like, less response. Like, things that we would not even think about if you,
because you don't have to. And then in terms of, this is actually in the book White Fragility that we spoke to and said people should read, and they have this breakdown of sort of powerful people in this country, and the 10 richest Americans, 100% white, U.S. Congress, 90% white, U.S. governors, 96% white, top military advisors, 100% white, president and vice president, again, 100% white. And then you can look at, you know, people who decide what TV shows we see, 93% white, which books we read, 90% white, so on and so forth. Owners of professional football teams, 97% white. It's white people are in control of this country. They're in the positions of power. And that's just facts. And there is something to be said for seeing yourself as the protagonist in stories, seeing yourself reflected in the media outside of gross stereotypes. And, you know, white people are allowed to exist in society without the fear of being murdered by police. White people see police as helpers because that's the experience that they've had by and large. But you have to understand that this country was built on racism, and you know, you can walk around the store and not be followed if you're a white person. There are so many examples of white privilege. And, you know, honestly, if you think it's not real and you just want to share a meme about it, and these points aren't being taken, Google it. Mm-hmm. Like, Google what is white privilege, or Google explaining white privilege to poor white people, or Google, you know, look into it, because it's, you know, I'm not trying to promote some agenda here. It's the truth. It's the facts. And any person with an internet connection can find them.
Yeah.
White privilege is real, you know?
And it's more than, like, it's so real that there are lots of studies, and again, this is very Googleable, but racism against black people is largely considered a public health crisis. The idea that there's a term, weathering, that says that black people generally live have shorter life expectancies because their daily lived experience has so much more trauma, down to even, like, this is maybe sort of like something no one would think about, but I still remember 2 or 3 years ago when you and I were like reading something and came across the fact about how like Black people poop less. Like, and I was, and like, we were kind of like giggling and we were like, what? Like, that's, I mean, it's like
white men poop the most.
white men's bowels are like the comfiest. They're just like not stressed. But like there is, and that for a lot of people, I mean, it really blew my mind the first time it was brought to my attention that like nude color, flesh tone, Band-Aids, like all are a specific tone, and that tone is white. Like there used to be the skin colored Crayola crayon. Like only very, very recently have there been like foundation colors that are targeted for Black women. And like,
thanks Rihanna.
Like, and Band-Aids that are like actually a tone that would blend for Black people. I mean, like that is actually, I mean, and they're on the, there's like the list that you sent too. That was a great list. The Vice list of, like a lot of different examples of white privilege, but like hair and going to a hairstylist and having someone who actually knows how to style your hair the best way. And I mean, there are many videos of kids not being able to like continue at a school because their hair is like not in code, which like, what the fuck does that mean? Like, it's too ethnic. I don't understand, yeah. But it's certainly traumatizes kids.
Yeah. Like, and people get fired from their jobs because their hair isn't quote professional when it's Black people wearing their hair naturally. It's not quote professional.
Yeah.
Like, so you're expected to spend hundreds and hundreds of dollars a month on treatments to make your hair look white. So it's quote unquote professional, and that's not what naturally happens with your hair. It, you know, it's just like there's example after example, and you know, every thing that we do in our day-to-day lives, as white people, we don't have to think about in the same way. Mm-hmm. It's incredibly unjust and it's incredibly real. Everybody.
Yeah. And I'm just trying to see if I can find so you want to talk about race, the Ijeoma Oluo. She has a chapter that's called like, is it really about race? And like, I mean, the long and the short of it is like, if it is about race, if a person of color thinks it's about race, like it is in some way. And she says three things. One, it is about race if a person of color thinks it's about race. Two, it is about race if it disproportionately or differently affects people of color. Three, it is about race if it fits into a broader pattern of events that disproportionately or differently affect people of color. And even though she says, hey, I get that that might seem like that's a huge category and almost anything can fall into it, but like,
point.
That's because that's the point. Like,
right. Well, so. Then everything's racist. Light bulb.
Yeah, there it is. And I get, like, I also, you know, I think that we can sound sort of flippant sometimes when we're talking about it. It's because it's a very frustrating and uncomfortable and like topic. It just sucks. But I have said a million times, I'm so grateful to the teachers that I had, the public school teachers I had when I was in middle and high school, for challenging me and making me uncomfortable before I even got to college. Before, you know, when I was growing up in a very like white suburban school, basically, I need to read there's a book called like, Why Do All the Black Kids Sit by Themselves at the Cafeteria or something. And, I really want to read that book because that was totally my experience at school, in high school. It was like, they all sat, it was totally segregated, self-segregated. And that was because we were busing people in from inner city Boston, and no one was really ever like actually addressing kind of, it was just like this huge elephant in the room. Like, what? But I had a few teachers who were able to kind of tackle that and tackle the white privilege and do it in a way that I think just when you can break the seal on that discomfort early and get people to feel like, okay, you got defensive, and now are we past that so that we can have a real conversation?
Right. And worth noting that 82% of teachers in this country are white.
Yeah.
Which is another thing, you know, having yourself reflected. But I think we wanted to, unless there's anything more you want to speak to on white privilege, I think we wanted to talk about one of the questions we got that kind of comes to black on black crime, which is also something I've seen spoken about a lot. And so this person called and basically said that they agree that, you know, the officers, like the officer that killed George Floyd, are in the wrong, they're despicable, they need to be charged. But why aren't people talking about black and black crime? They talked about Chicago specifically and the murders that have happened there while all of these protests are going on. And to speak to the first point quickly, the black on black crime thing that just is coming up left and right. Just to kind of squash that, like, if you're black and you live in a black neighborhood, you are more likely to be killed by a black person. If you're a white person in a white neighborhood, you're more likely to be killed by a white person. White on white crime stats are equivalent to black on black crime stats. So it's the people who are bringing up this black on black crime, it's just to like create this false narrative, to create this idea that black people are just these criminals. But no, yes, black on black crime is more common than cops killing black people. White on white crime too, and cops are more likely, 2.5 more times more likely to kill a black person than a white person. And as we said last night, black people are less likely to be armed in these instances. So the black on black crime quote unquote argument isn't an argument. It's just kind of, you know.
Yeah. Right. It's an easy talking point. It's an easy place for people that seems like a foothold, but it really isn't when you kind of like dig into the statistics. The kind of specific question, like framing it around how there were 18 people killed on Sunday, May 31st in the south and west side of Chicago. I guess the questioner asked like to, they feel like Black Lives Matter focuses specifically on like certain things and then not other things. So he was wondering kind of like what, you know, why haven't we heard more about these killings in Chicago? And I will admit, I had not heard that Chicago statistic, and that seems like based on a couple of news outlets that this would make that one of the most deadly nights in Chicago since the data goes back as far as 1961. So that's a pretty shocking statistic, or it's a shocking number, and it's definitely upsetting to think about how the 18 people were killed on Sunday. And part of the reason that they think that there were that many people killed was because of the Black Lives Matter like marches that were diverting police resources away who might otherwise be responding to situations in the South Side of Chicago. But I think it's important. It's not that the Black Lives Matter movement isn't talking about this. They actually are. And I would this is such a big movement that has gone global in this moment, but the leaders of the Black Lives Matter movement just throughout since 2014, since it started, frequently talk about crime in Chicago and how the police can better serve the community and how to make these communities safer, more sustainable places. It's sort of something that's like it's a regular topic of conversation that's like almost a little bit more, that's where the conversation I think gets a little bit more mundane. That's the work of listening to Crooked Media's Pod Save the People every week, because they're talking about community improvement, basically. And they're talking about that through the statistics that we all have, through the statistics of policing and the statistics of how racism is insidiously influencing certain communities disproportionately, and how there's environmental racism, and how there's certain areas where there's like a lot more lead in the paint in the buildings, and like there's lots of. So I would just say that while it doesn't seem like the Black Lives Matter movement, first of all, which is not led by any one person, which is by design, they deeply care. I mean, they care more than anyone else about their community and about making their communities safer. And their answers are on Campaign Zero and Eight Can't Wait and the Black Lives Matter websites that we'll link to. There's lots of different, but the answer to this, I think, it's just a bit more mundane. Like, it's sort of like this is something that they talk about, but they talk about it a lot. And it's more of the daily work. And I think in this moment, this is we're in the heat of a movement about how Black Lives Matter, and it's focusing specifically on police violence and police accountability, at least the spotlight, because of George Floyd being the trigger, and then Breonna Taylor and Tony McDade. There's a reason why the spotlight has stayed on police brutality, which is also partly majorly the fault of the police. Right. Because they keep being brutal. Like, they keep brutalizing peaceful citizens. So
yeah, hundreds of documented instances of that. And, you know, and also a lot of the...
Oops.
A lot of sort of these ideas around building better social protections, better social services, better public services for people, which sort of, this person also had a question about, with this movement to defund the police, you know, they thought this terrible path to go down, who's going to respond to things, collect evidence, process crimes. And so just kind of reiterate what we were saying last night, and then I'll also come back to what we were just talking about. The idea isn't to tomorrow wake up and there's no police officers. The idea is that cops right now are expected to respond to things that are outside of their breadth, outside of their training, outside of their expertise, outside of what probably most of them not even want to respond to. You know, things that would be better served by social workers, you know, by mental health experts trained in de-escalation. You know, we talked about how in Washington state, you know, hairstylists have to go to school for like twice as long. And if you look at other countries and their cops, they're going to school for years, not going to school, but they're training for years for these positions. Mm-hmm. And they do not have, I mean, they also have better, you know, gun safety laws, but their officers are armed and they don't have the kinds of shootings we do by any stretch of the imagination. It's not even fucking close. Mm-hmm. So I think part of like one, speaking to murders of Black people by Black people in these communities, one, again, similar, I mean, statistically the same rates as white on white. Two, when you look at the news and the media, we actually do disproportionately report crimes committed by Black people versus by white people. So we're talking about it too much. And then also, again, kind of what I was speaking to, if we better serve these communities that we are, you know, treating like shit, not funding, gerrymandering, you know, history of redlining, if we're actually serving these communities with social services, you know, all the projections say that crime will decrease, because it's not, oh, these people are just violent. No, it's, again, white on white crime, just as common. And two, we do not give resources to Black communities. In fact, we try our darndest to keep resources away from Black communities. And if we were to approach this country in a better way, in a way in which we actually invested in education in poor communities, we actually invested in, you know, social services, mental health services. I mean, it's interesting how people look at crack as a criminal problem and opioids as a health problem, and then you look at the people who are using them, you know, we just need to do better in terms of the social services we provide to people. And again, speaking to the point about defunding the police, it is not about taking away all cops tomorrow. It is about reallocating the bloated, you know, how much money we give to police departments, and taking some of that money and putting it towards social services, mental health services, drug recovery programs, education, things like that, to prevent problems before they start. Because, yeah, it's everything's broken, pretty much.
Yeah. Everything is broken. Yeah, I think that we, we just need to think about like where our priorities are and, do the work. I think, and this goes back to kind of our conversation from last night a bit more, but really do the work of understanding where this anger is coming from, where this movement is coming from. And it's coming from 400 years of American history. So that's a thing that we can't, and by the way, that's on all of us. And it's none of our, like, we just inherited it. It's mm-hmm. we're born into this world the way it already was. And it's our work to make it better. These systems were built, they can be unbuilt, mm-hmm. They can be transformed. So it's the history, and it's really like, and it's looking at that without a defensive eye, without just understanding it. And again, we were taught history in a specific way. It's about unlearning a lot of what we learned or seeing it through different perspectives, and taking in much more information about that. But then, so it's like that can help us understand the anger and the hurt. And we also need to, I think, like there's almost a deifying or a idolatry, I think, of police in this country. And look, we're not... I think that there, like you said, like there's a role for police here. I mean, they're like people. It's
bank robbers,
right? Right. With the like masks from the 1920 silent films, or no, like there's, of course there has to be a system, but as Trevor Noah spoke about, and on the end of the Daily Show, there's a very powerful clip where this woman references it. We live in a world where we're all in social contract with each other. Mm-hmm. And I think that the police, along with mental health professionals and just radically rethinking the way we respond to crises, mm-hmm. police can be a part of that. And I, you know, understanding kind of the broad sense of defunding the police, like, that can be misleading. It is a misleading term in a sense. If you don't kind of dig into what do activists mean when they say defund the police, they don't mean get rid of, like, have complete chaos and lawlessness. That's not what it is, but it's just this idea that mental health professionals can respond to certain calls first.
Right.
Police who are familiar with the community and do not have a gun respond to certain things first, so that these escalations don't happen.
Right. Because currently police officers in this country, not every single one, but police officers in this country are contributing to lawlessness. They mm-hmm. watch the videos. They are not cops. There are a lot of cops in this country that are thugs. Mm-hmm. We like to use thugs as a not very coded term against just any black person existing, but when you look at what's going on in this country, and when you look at all the police reports and what they said was happening, and then looking at the actual videos of what was happening, and looking at all of the quote unquote good apple cops who aren't doing these things but are protecting these cops, and then cops who actually speak out against the shitty things that are going on get fired. Mm-hmm. yeah, I don't have a lot of faith in the police in this country as a whole. I think we need to drastically rethink it, and I think they should probably be doing, I don't know, 1% of what they're doing. I've never, I mean, you know, when, did I bring this, not to make this about me, but like when I was assaulted in New York, the cops did not help me. You know, it was all, they were the least helpful they could have possibly been.
I was thinking a lot about that.
Yeah. And I'm a white person. I just, the police in this country are not equipped to do what they're supposed to be doing. And I think any quote unquote good cop has to be frustrated with what they're expected to be doing and the lack of training that they have, the, and a lot of the, it's like eight can't wait stuff. A lot of like NYPD like banned chokeholds years ago, and still people were killed with chokeholds. Police are given, I think, too much power in this country. I think they're given immunity in cases that they shouldn't be. And so, you know, yes, defund the police, because the police, as we see it now, the police as they exist in this country now, that needs to be gone away with, because that has not worked. That is not working. They're killing people with impunity, and yeah, it's broken. So sure, a version of the police should exist in cases where mental health experts and social workers and people in the community cannot help. You know, if someone is breaking into your house with a gun, you know, there should be someone who can come and help you who is armed, I suppose. But again, those issues won't happen as much when we are serving our communities better. So the idea is that one, police will be less necessary if we're investing in these other things. And two, in a lot of these calls where people end up dying, cops don't need to be called in the first place. Like there should be a very specialized police force for very specific things where people are armed, for instance. And these police officers should have a shit ton of training. So it's not about getting rid of every cop. It's about rethinking the role of police, and it's about drastically reducing what police are called for. And I think that would serve everyone best.
Absolutely. I mean,
that's
and this
my spiel.
Yeah, I think that, well, and I think it's, it was a good spiel, first of all. Second of all, I think we can also, this is one of those things where we can look to other countries and see like, this is in, like, kind of like gun violence broadly. This is another like chestnut of an American problem, where someone who lives in the US is 60 times more likely to be killed by the police than someone in the UK. And Black people are 3 times more likely than a white person to be killed by police. There's sort of, but think about too, that how hard it is for police to get prosecuted. Like we talked about police unions a lot last night, and we'll talk about them again in a deep dive in another episode, because I think there's just so much. And thankfully, this is one good thing about this this moment, is the spotlight being on police unions, because those contracts are really fucked up. But thinking about how most unions, which by the way, like, conservatives are sort of generally sort of anti-labor, anti-union, having strong footholds, but the police union contracts go so far beyond like general labor standards of like negotiating with the state for pay. They also have, they talk about in the event of prosecution, like all of these different eventualities that might happen to protect cops from accountability and from being properly prosecuted. There's lines written into these contracts where they say that the cops are allowed to confer with others, basically meaning like confer with their other colleagues before, so they can get their statement straight, like a, like right out of the wire. But I also, like you said about police with their, they hold so much power right now in this country, not only power through the union contracts negotiated for them, but also just the power they have the physical power with the gun, but they have the power of the narrative. And they've up until recently have really had the power of the public trust, which has been generally unearned, at least like the power of like white people trusting them, I would maybe caveat. But yeah. We should think about too, the police report of George Floyd before the video came out literally said, officers, blah, 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 blah. Two officers arrived and located the suspect, male believed to be in his 40s. He was ordered to step away from the car. After he got out, he physically resisted officers. Officers were able to get the suspect into handcuffs and noted he appeared to be suffering mental distress. Officers called for an ambulance. He was transported to Hennepin County Medical Center by ambulance, where he died a short time later. At no time were weapons of any type used by anyone involved in this incident. Oh. Yeah. Really?
Quite a retelling. I fucking
beg to differ.
Yeah.
That's what, and that is, like, think about how often those narratives are solidified into the public narrative, into the public record. How many bodies are under that?
Yep. And we shouldn't have any police officers out there that have 80 things against them saying they've used too much force, you know? And if you are someone who believes that police officers should, I mean, I think we all believe police officers should be there to do good. Hasn't been the case by and large, then you shouldn't have any problem with this idea of defunding and reorganizing the whole thing, because what this is going to do is make anyone who has a badge, granted there'll be less of them, but actually accountable to the community, actually trained in what they're supposed to be doing, and actually maybe be good guys with guns, which they're not right now. They're murderers, you know, predators. And also this idea that you can have a few bad apples in the cops, but any protesters who were quote unquote violent are, you can just paint all of them with the same brush, even though they have a reason to be violent. And more often than not, when violence breaks out, it's the cops doing it, as you can see in all the videos. So, I mean, I understand that a lot of white people have seen police officers as people to trust, and you have to kind of rethink your worldview because you haven't had to experience certain things. But look at the videos, look at the numbers, look at all of the evidence in front of us, and it says policing in this country is broken, and that police in this country are doing more harm than good, and so we need to completely overhaul the system, and I think defund the police and make a whole new fucking system. But.
And practically defunding the police, I think, is the only way to get rid of, to dissolve these union contracts and get and get better ones, is like to say, well, this department no longer exists.
Yeah, and it's like, and when you look at like what, I mean, just at looking at Seattle's proposed budget and how much goes to the SPD and how little is going towards housing and social services and public services. It's, you know, it's all broken, and we need to fix it, and we're late to it. But the time is far past now. So let's just do it now.
Let's do it. And one, just to address directly the last point made by one of our callers, the fatal shooting of a retired police officer, David Dorn, in St. Louis. That's tragic. They've made an arrest. I hope that police officer, his family gets justice just as much as anyone else. He responded to a pawn shop, alarm when it was being looted. That is tragic. You know, this is not an either or. But
this is a black police officer who was murdered.
Yes, this is a black police officer murdered in St. Louis. I believe maybe not last weekend, recently, over the course of the looting and the riots that have happened, and looting and riots are obviously bad. Like we can all, there are pieces of this that we can all agree on. It's just about really focusing on why this is happening, where the sentiment is coming from. And again, that there are bad actors. I will say the scariest thing that's happened in Seattle that I have seen, and this was widely circulated on social media, was a fucking scary white dude who grabbed an AR-15 out of a cop vehicle when they were burning cars a couple of weekends ago. And thankfully, you know, someone grabbed it from him in a moment of chaos and like arrested him. But it was very scary. It was seeing someone walk down downtown Seattle with a bandana and an AR-15, some scary white guy. There's a lot of, as we talked about, I think yesterday, or maybe you and I just talked about it, but there's a lot of evidence that a lot of people who are doing the looting are white people who are totally disregarding like the desires of the peaceful protesters. Like you talked about the Starbucks video, which was great. You know, it's a protester saying like, we're going to get blamed for this. And I'm telling you, please don't do that. You know, you're not me. I don't know who you're doing this for, but it's not me. Yeah. We have to be able to have a nuanced conversation, and the windows of Nordstrom and Target will be replaced. It's all replaceable. Yeah. George Floyd's life gone forever. So let's not lose sight of the human lives here.
Yeah. And I would even argue that looting and rioting isn't always bad. The optics aren't good, and people will use that against them to sort of discount their arguments. But and I, like you said, sort of to your point, it seems that most of the people that are starting looting and riots are white people and or cops themselves. Mm-hmm. But I mean, you know, like that woman who spoke at the end of the John Oliver episode that you also spoke to, I don't feel like I have any sort of right to cast any judgment.
Oh yeah. No.
On it. And I think that, you know, sometimes destruction of property is part of the protesting, but I also do think that more often than not, based off all the evidence we have, the looting and the rioting is being done by cops and white people. So just we'll throw that out there.
Yeah. Yeah. And I mean, and to the, you know, I'm trying to think of like conservative arguments that I've heard or that I've, you know, that I've engaged with. It's sort of like, yes. And of course there are also black people looting, like that is also happening. But in those contexts, I go right back to, like you said, that woman who talks about the social contract and why should they care about a Target when, you know, it's not, what did Malcolm X say? That's not a chip on my shoulder. That's your knee on my neck. Like, you know, it's like that, nothing has fucking changed. And that in that part of the breach of the social contract. So let's fix the social contract. And I think that the windows will fix themselves, will be fixed like through that.
Right. Yeah. So, you know, I think TLDR, any white people who are in good faith, not fully understanding things, even as we've laid them out, Google it, research it, and make an effort to read things outside of your usual sources. You know, don't just read Fox News or Breitbart's hot takes. Look for opinion pieces written by Black people. Look for other publications. And you can even do there's nonpartisan,
PolitiFact.
Yeah, that look into, and they'll show you like, okay, like for instance, MSNBC has a liberal skew, but they are still news, you know, they still reach the accuracy threshold. So you can look at that and find sources that reach the threshold of actually being news that maybe fit your fancy. But for the love of God, just read, just listen, just try to learn. Because that's a good starting point. And
And keep reaching out with questions, because I think that I think it's very important that we try to connect on this. And it's also like, we feel like it's our responsibility to connect with our, with the conservative friends and family and acquaintances and online peoples that want to talk to us about it.
Yes. Yes. Thank you for sending those in. I hope I wasn't too.
I'm gonna be me about it. But
you know, I just appreciate it. And any, you know, we're both passionate, and I think it also is, I don't think any of the callers we need to be treated with kid gloves. You know?
No.
They're grown adults, and I think they appreciate our unfiltered response.
So yes, totally.
We do appreciate it. We just might not always handle with kid gloves, because you don't need that.
No, no one does.
Yeah, except for kids sometimes.
Yeah.
Literal children.
Yeah, yeah. And I've been interested. It's been really interesting to see the resources. Like, I'm really glad that I do not have a young child in this environment. Mm-hmm. Like, where would you begin between
Sesame Street? Actually, apparently,
I did see that
great stuff.
Okay, Elmo's dad was like weird, but yes, I watched the segment because then I did cry, obviously. But I was like, Elmo's dad, he had like a Hawaiian shirt, he had a whole thing,
it was a whole vibe.
He had a name that was like funny. It was just sort of like, is that Elmo's dad? Have they ever had an Elmo's dad before? Yeah.
And apparently I have a network of people with children in my life. I used to work with kids a lot, so I see these things, and apparently, like the Sesame Street thing that I think we're both speaking to, and they've done a lot of them, but a lot of things touching on important issues, but apparently like it's actually like getting through to kids too, and they're understanding it, and it's good for the parents. Like parents are learning more. So like, yas, Sesame Street. Thank you.
Yeah. Oh my God. It was, yeah. I mean, I did sort of tear up. Yeah.
And like, white people you need to talk to your kids, because Black people don't have an option. They have to talk to their kids about what to do when a cop pulls you over. Everything you can try and do. And even if you do everything exactly the way you're supposed to, there's still a good chance you'll get harassed, assaulted, charged, murdered. And so I think I'm not a parent, I'm not a mother, but white people need to talk to your kids about race and their privilege and what they can do, how they can be anti-racist. And of course, there are different age-appropriate ways to do it. Again, the internet.
The internet, great resource. Google it.
PBS, they've got it.
All right. You know. Oh, one more thing before we kind of wrap. I just wanted to nod to how the movement has been really inspiring on a global level. It's really been cool to see these huge protests happening in France and Germany and Australia and New Zealand and just all over the place. And to see different colonizers, slave traders, and Confederate monuments like across the world getting finally taken down in a real way, because it did seem like after Charlottesville, after in the 2014 Ferguson riots, like there's been a lot of moments where we sort of like inch forward, and then people are like, but no, the Confederate monuments, it's our heritage. And it's like,
it's not racist. Oh my God. What does it mean? What were they fighting for?
Also, like, I find it hilarious is totally the wrong word, but it's like, fuck this. When you see a Confederate flag in like Eastern Washington or like the Washington state suburbs, and it's like, the Confederacy wasn't here. So what are you trying to say?
So what is your point? Supporting history in the South.
Yeah.
Like, where's your Union flag? You're just really invested in. MAGA country, but.
Yeah. It's nice to see these monuments being taken down all over the world. It feels like this is, you know, It is, while it is an incredibly heavy time to be existing in this world, it's also really inspiring. So,
yeah.
And a moment, it does feel like there are moments where I feel like, wow, maybe this is a moment. Maybe this is the start of change.
I'm hopeful. I wonder how how much of it has to do with like all these white people coming out now for this and the pandemic and not having other things, you know. It's like I wonder how many white allies would be participating as much as they and we are if it wasn't for the pandemic. But I mean, that's just sort of a negative, it's a negative thought that doesn't really have any sort of a follow-up. It's sort of a
just a little like turn in the punch bowl.
I guess the point to be made from that is like, let's all make sure that next week and the week after and the week after we're still focused on this and haven't moved on to other things, because whatever the reason for this all happening now, it is happening now, and we need to all keep doing it.
Yeah, whatever 2020 witch's brew that has like led to this swirling, bubbling
2020 witch's brew.
Let's keep it going. Let's adopt a state. Let's really educate ourselves on the ways in which like we can really radically change the way we think about police, different policies that can be changed literally like today. Let's keep talking about it.
Yeah. Be the change, babies.